welcome all. Step right up, step right up. Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 56 is here. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Portal Gaming Podcast is a product of a store called The Portal, located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.timemachineportal.com. Check us out on Facebook, The Portal. Find us on Twitter, at Portal Gaming 60. Portal Gaming Podcast is a product, is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. And that is very apropos because we just came back from Dice Tower Con 2017. And that is what we are dedicating this episode to. Howdy, everybody. My name is The Brant. I am your host. With me, as always, is...
your co-host, Brian.
And special guest with us on this episode number 56.
Gary Pope from Late to the Table.
Awesome. And this is Gary's second episode, I believe, with us on Portal Gaming Podcast. So
With you. First with me. I haven't been on with Gary yet.
So. Nice. Yeah, I've been trying to dodge it for a while now. Can't avoid it for too long.
So how's everybody doing? Are you recovered from our week in Florida?
I think I might personally be getting a tiny bit sick, but I don't think it's from Florida. It's not like the, like, whoa, immediately after. Yeah, sorry to now announce that.
Gary will continue this episode by himself.
But I wouldn't call it the con crud or anything like that, but because this is actually like maybe 4 or 5 days afterwards, I'm actually starting to feel a little something. But I could be feeling better. But I have recovered from the con, though, so things are looking up at least.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty easy to get back into the swing of things for me, though I guess my week is a little shifted, so I was coming back and getting, like, the next 2 days off, you know, so I haven't really gotten to a, like, consistent level for board game plays since getting back. It seems like it, like, spiked so much for the weekend, and now it's kind of, you know, taking a step away, relatively speaking, but it'll be good to play some stuff tonight, you know, and just get back into that here.
Yeah. I got smacked around on Sunday, I guess. I just, you know, not a great amount of sleep over those days. And then the plane flight early on Sunday when I got home, I was just useless for Sunday. But by the time I got to Monday, I was fine. And then I had to suffer through, you know, going to the pool and taking my daughter there and putting my feet up and then immediately playing games after swimming in the pool. So
this is just like Dice Tower, right? All those times you went in the pool.
That's right, yeah.
Down there.
So it was a tough comeback. So, yeah, so we're going to talk about that. I think rather than run through events, we'll start off with a game of the con. It doesn't have to be your number one or whatever, but just something that you played there that was a big deal. On the next episode, Brian and I are going to run through, like, all our plays and kind of review all those games we play. But here we'll just hit a couple and we'll hit the events and the overall for Dice Tower Con 2017. Gary, take us away with a game that you played at Dice Tower Con.
I'm already going to cheat on this list. I think I'm going to talk about two games really briefly, very briefly. The first game was Flatline, which completely surprised me. It's basically the, I guess you could say, the older brother of Fuse. It's made by the same guy. I'm drawing a blank on the
Kane
name.
Kane Klenka.
Thank you. It's made by Renegade Games, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so basically in Flatline, you're trying to rescue patients, and basically throughout the game, there's going to be two phases, essentially. There's going to be a phase in which all the bad things are occurring, which you're going to be drawing cards which say, like, what dice you have to be rolling on a thing. And during the second phase, it's basically going to be when you're actually rolling the dice and doing all the actions live. That's basically the quickest synopsis I could give of the game to give you the general idea of what's going on. And one thing that it really surprised me, at first I thought it was going to be maybe a little bit too bland, or maybe it wasn't going to live up to the hype of it or anything like that, but I was blown away by that game. It's definitely going to be one of those future purchases that I make, because that game was just, it really surprised me. I'll go as far as saying that I liked it a lot more than Fuse, and I liked Fuse a lot, but that game I could see bringing to the table and working way more than Fuse can. Fuse, I'd almost would use in bar situations, while Flatline is like, I can play this with other gamers, and they'll actually walk away saying, oh, I enjoyed that game, or hey, can we play that again? The second game I want to talk about really quickly is Downforce, which I'm basically calling it Ave Caesar 2.0. In Downforce, this is basically, it was made by Reincarnation, what's that group?
Reincarnation.
Hey, that could be a new publisher's name, Reincarnation Games. Yeah. What was it?
Restoration.
Restoration Games, that's what it was. in which they brought back the old, it was made by a completely different name in the 70s. I can't remember what it was. It was like Downtrodden or something like that. It was none of that. Ignore everything I've been saying for the past 5 minutes. Anyways, in Downforce, what you're basically doing is you're racing around a track, and you are basically placing bets. You're kind of purchasing which car you want to use at first, and then throughout the race, you're going to be playing cards, which the cards will move several different cars at the same time around the track. And you're basically trying to get your car to go across the finish line because you, of course, score more points. But at the same time, to balance things out, if someone gets too far ahead, there are moments where you can bet on other cars. It's a very simple game. You're just playing cards. Each car has a different little ability that it can use. And it's one of those games where it actually feels like a racing game because it's a racing game that's compact to 30 minutes or less. You can't go any longer than 30 minutes. If you somehow go longer than 30 minutes in that game, you should not be playing with those people. But it's a great game, and it actually really surprised me because when people made comparisons to Ave Caesar and other games, I was kind of a little bit skeptical because Ave Caesar is one of my favorite racing games of all time. I think it is my favorite racing game of all time. But and nothing has really come close to matching the simplicity and just simple sheer fun of it. But this one definitely has accomplished it. I wish there was a couple of things that were a little bit more similar to Ave Caesar. But for the most part, 90% of the game is probably, I would say, Ave Caesar. But yeah, that was the two games I would recommend checking out from Dice Tower Convention. That was Downforce and Flatline.
Awesome. Nice. Brian.
Yeah, so heading into the con, the two of us actually had been talking, Brant, about seeking out a copy of Lignum to try out from the upcoming release from Capstone Games. So we kind of headed down there. You had heard a rumor that there was this game, like a single copy of the game at the convention being played at the bottom of the stairs. And like nothing else was given out for detail. It was just, we were looking at all the stairs in the convention halls, just trying to see if there was a copy floating around. There was an event that you were helping out with at one point, and I was kind of going through, checking out what was being played, and I saw a game finishing up of Lignum. So I went over, talked to them, figured out who owned the copy, and it actually worked out that the guy had lived, you know, within walking distance of the store at one point. And then moved down to Florida, so it was just kind of a neat backstory to that. But we talked to him for a little bit, set up a time. He seemed like his schedule was pretty packed, so we had like one window to actually get it to the table. So we played it kind of closer to the end of the convention for us, but we did get Lignum to the table, And that's the basic mechanisms behind that. You're kind of working over the course of 2 years, and you're taking actions within each season of those years, spring, summer, fall, and winter. And you're going to be moving around a track, kind of collecting resources to score points by collecting lumber, like wood and lumber and all that sort of stuff, working it through the logistics from the forests all the way through to, bringing it down to cut it, to either send it out to sell it or bring it into your own personal tableau. So, because every winter you're going to have to do that similar thing where you're feeding your workers and I don't know what the wood is going toward. Is that just for heating and stuff like that? You're going to have to
the firewood?
Firewood. You're using some of that wood to kind of, to pay for all the stuff that you're working toward over the course of the game. But basically, it's all about the logistics, trying to figure out what am I going to need from year to year, or from season to season even, and what can I save up to get to store for winter. And then even beyond that, you're really setting yourself up so you can do more than just pay for what you're doing. You're trying to score points as well. I guess the bulk of that is money is what you're trying to get at the end of the game, and a lot of cards, contract sort of things you can kind of work toward by trying to fulfill those. Like there are a few different types of wood, so the contracts might require a specifically aged type of one style of wood and a couple other different types as well. So basically you can, commit some of your resources to those cards to get a decent bump in points, which, is money basically. So I don't know. It's a really thinky game, trying to figure out what you're going to be able to do, and it seems like it can be pretty mean with, you know, with all the stuff that's available. So it was awesome. We played with one variant that we might try differently the next time, but either way, Lignum is one to really keep your eye out for if you're looking for a heavy game. So that should be coming out really soon from Capstone Games.
Yeah. Yeah, I got to play that too, and I'm not sure. Like, it is like pre-planning logistics to the max. Like, there are six rounds, basically, if you don't count winter, because winter's kind of automated. I mean, you do get to do things in winter, but... And you can plan things three rounds out. So it's like three seasons out. So it's like real official. But, but
sometimes
yeah,
you're forced into planning it. Like, you can't, you don't have options. You have to be
thinking
those three rounds ahead.
Right. That's the whole, that is the whole game. It's like you go around and collect all your resources, and then, like, you better know exactly to the dollar what you spent your resources on. Mm-hmm. It's almost like your full time job is to take care of your farm, and you're like, could I turn this into a side job?
Right.
And the person who can turn into a side job will score, like, medium amount of points. And the person who can turn into, like, a full-time job, like, okay, I provide resources for my family and make this extra money on the side, is the person that wins the game. That's what it kind of comes down to. You said the game is mean. I suppose in some sense you can be mean to each other because you can grab things from people. But it feels like the game is meaner to you if you... Not even if you don't plan, because obviously that's the point of the game. But, like... If you just make one small planning mistake just in the chaos of your brain, it's just like, yeah, nope, you're done.
Yeah, but I mean, at a certain point, it does turn that corner. Once people figure out where they're trying to go or, like, what they're trying to do, then they're optimal spots for people to, like, you know, a few individuals to go. I know even, like, the last round was, like, a pretty different dynamic, like, where the Sawyers were very limited. You know, and like it was just one thing that we didn't really see over the most, like, the most of the course of the game.
Yeah.
You know, there were limitations when we're looking at that final round.
Yeah.
So now all of a sudden that's becoming so much more valuable than any of the other spaces, so it's kind of a race to get there.
Yeah.
And each season you're also going all the way around the circular track, going up to go off to the forest to, you know, cut wood in a set section that you're only able to go to, basically, like, the first person gets to go to one section first, and then so on and so forth. So it's kind of a benefit to get there first, and I could see that being, like, you know, pretty mean depending on how you play the game. Like, our variant was a little more forgiving,
yeah,
but even still, like, I remember, like, getting to a certain section first was pretty key on getting a set type of wood or something like that, you know. So I think besides that, there were also a couple of times where, like, some of those, the resource tokens that you could get, like, some were just so much better for individuals. Like, I know at one point we were kind of racing for one, and you weren't thinking that I needed it for something, like, and then you skipped over. Like,
I did get
and
very
it was
mad
like,
at you. Why are you taking that?
Right. So it's like it makes sense, but
extremely clear to you and completely unclear
right.
to me.
So it just feels like it kind of has that that bit of you want to do everything, but you also need to do it a little faster than your opponents.
Yeah.
So
cool. Well, being the gentleman that I am, I realize I'm going to give up my slot talking about a game, because I've already talked about Three Kingdoms Redux on the podcast, but you guys got a chance to play for the first time. So, I still want to talk about this, because it's good, but I realize, oh, I've already talked about Three Kingdoms Redux. So, Three Kingdoms Redux, another Capstone game, so apparently they got a half our love here. This is Three Kingdom... Yes. Three factions fighting it out in, early AD's China for control. And so the three of us got to play. You two had not played before. I know, Brian, it was kind of elusive for you getting to play this game. It was always like, oh, not tonight's not now. It got to work. Oh, now we don't have two. We have, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Or we don't have three people because it's a three-player only. So I believe in our game of Three Kingdoms Redux, it ended up being a tie between Brian and I, and you won on the most resources.
Yeah.
So... That's how that played out. The game can play 12 rounds. Do you think it was round 7? Did anybody mark that? I didn't mark it. I want to say it was round 7, maybe
round
8.
Seven,
somewhere
eight-ish,
right around
somewhere
there.
Yeah.
Cool. So give us your reactions to Three Kingdoms Redux, Gary.
I was actually surprised that I liked that as much as I did. And I'll be honest, usually when I'm getting, like, explained rules, especially if it's long rules, especially if it's been a long day, Brant probably noticed. I was probably dozing off in the middle of his rules explanation. It's not at Brant's fault at all, but it's just the scope of the time, and also like it is a length. I wouldn't say it's a lengthy teach. Just there's a lot of little things you have to teach, but it all makes sense and all is really easy once you gather it all together and understand how everything works. But I was surprised how much I liked it. If there was one thing that I didn't enjoy in it as much as I thought I could have, maybe, or maybe I just didn't understand it fully, was how battles work in that game. Because it was a little bit, at first it was a little bit confusing, understandable, when I had to actually teach the game, because I actually ended up teaching the game 2 days later to other people. It's a little bit, it's not as smooth as it could be, I guess is the best way to put it. I mean, granted, at the same time, all you had to do is really get, what, two sets of the same kind of armies, or one set of the same kind of army, depending on what kind of general you have. Mm-hmm. But it just, I guess it was a little, I guess you could say, finicky. But besides that, though, the game went smooth. I like the whole bidding mechanism in the game. I like how you could get plus one on different bidding options, like the moral support, which gets you plus one, or your own little abilities that give you plus one. I like all the different ways that the game can end as well. I mean, granted, some people don't like it when games end prematurely or when games end quickly, but it's just like, it's cool that there's that whole give and take when you're playing a game where it's like, oh, we have to stop Gary from doing this because he'll end the game because of this, or you have to stop Brian from doing this because he'll end the game doing this, or whatever. I like the whole push-pull of that entire mechanism, because it's, especially with games that require, or not require, but games that you can get a lot of replay value out of it, it changes the meta a lot, because you might see, like, after a while, someone wins a game after 12 rounds, or a game gets to the end normally all the time, but then you're like, oh, you know what, I'm going to break the meta by doing everything to end this game as quickly as possible by doing this specific action. And that's why I like it. It gives you a lot of options in that game to play differently.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But and also all the different factions were cool too. I was actually going through a couple of them while teaching the game to other people, and I was just like, oh man, all these guys are so vastly different. There's a whole deck stack full of all those different generals for each different faction as well. So there's like, what, a total of I think easily 100 plus characters in that game that change up everything completely. So it's really cool. I like how diverse and how different the game is, and how you can mix it up a lot from game to game.
Man. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it too, it definitely benefits from those repeat plays, though, just with like trying to figure out the value of everything that you're doing, trying to see what contributes to actually winning the game, because there are a lot of different things that, you know, that score closer to that very end. But again, like Gary was saying, like, that variability is just, that's key. Like, that's awesome. Just to kind of, I think just me personally, I like kind of having that structure prior to, like, you know, with these resources you have available, like, what can you do to create an engine and then, you know, get to that end game and see what you can, you know, I just like that direction that it does provide. So it's really neat. And I think even trying the different factions over the course of, like, you know, a few plays, like, it's so much different based on what you're doing. And, like, all the, I don't know the differences between, you know, the generals of one group versus another, but it seems like they were, you know, unique enough to kind of give each person some benefits for different things. So, I don't know, I really enjoyed it, too. And I think Capstone's been doing a great job.
I feel like it's one play to get the game down, though. Because, like, I think it's pretty easy to get in and be playing, but I think you were saying before we were recording a little bit more, but, like, the scoring is a little bit like, okay, that's what's happening, and the battles are like, okay, that's what's happening.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's kind of like running through a turn and seeing a battle and being like, okay, I get it. Because the battles are really auctions, but, like you said, it can be a little fiddly on pieces that are coming in and out of the battle.
Yeah, but I do like one thing that I remember you saying when I was learning the game, was that you can't exactly make a bad first few moves. It doesn't seem like, even while I was teaching people the game, I couldn't see anything where I was just like, oh, that doesn't make sense for you to do that. It doesn't make sense for you to do that. Because mostly just about everything you're going to need at some point. And also, not only are you going to need it at some point, but they're going to come up pretty quickly as well. So it's like, it's one of those games where, yes, it does require more plays, but even early on in the game, you're not going to make mistakes that completely take you out of the game, which is a really good thing to have in a game, I think.
Yeah, I'd almost argue you could make bad fourth and fifth moves. Like,
yeah,
you're
definitely
third in that category, and you took that action to put you still in third in that category.
Yeah.
You gained yourself no points. Like, don't do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, first moves, you're like, oh, okay, you put yourself ahead in that category. That makes sense, right? Like, it works out fine. So
yeah,
cool. Anything else with Three Kingdoms Redux?
Besides that, it is one game in which I think every single time I play it, I'm going to have to require a rule book just to double check. Like, if I was teaching the game. Like, I don't think I could walk away from that game for 6 months, come back, be able to teach everyone a game without having to look at that rule book once.
Well, the player, like, they have really good player reference sheets, those are awesome.
Those were great, actually, especially even when I was just... I still, like, remember the game from my first play, and I was teaching other people. That was, like, perfect to, I wouldn't say read off of, but just to look at, to jot down. But they are pretty lengthy, though. It literally is, like, two pieces of paper, front to back, yeah, covered with stuff. But if that game didn't have that, I would hate the game. I would almost hate the game, I'd say, if it wasn't for that. Because those are so crucial, I think.
Yeah, no, they're good. Awesome. My only complaint is I think the box is an inch thick. And I want it to be an inch and a half thick because I have to, like, flatten out all the pieces. And then, you know, like, there's, like, the woo pieces, but there's the woo scoring tokens and the woo pieces. And everybody's always like, why don't you just put the woo pieces in with the woo bag? I'm like, because it won't go flat enough to make the box close. So I have to put them in a separate bag so I can flatten everything out.
To get a visualization of how thin this box is, think of, like, your typical One Night Ultimate Werewolf box. That's like how thin this box is.
It's very thin for a big box.
But I'll say this, they put a lot of stuff into that box, though. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Is there a broken token insert for it?
Good luck. All right, awesome. So let's rewind and let's recap. We'll mostly go through events here for Dice Tower Con, so not as much games, but other things that we did and whatnot. And we'll close it out with, you know, some of your final thoughts. So we did take separate flights, but we all got there Wednesday morning. Sorry, Brian and I were on the same flight. Gary's on a separate one. But we all arrived Wednesday morning. Wednesday morning, check in, run down to the con. It was pretty light, but there was lots of hot games. Tom Vassell was down there teaching people games. Eric Summer was there teaching people games. So everybody was ready to go. There was no publisher booths or whatever, publisher area open yet. I think it opened pretty early. Or no, I think it opened at 1 o'clock.
It opened later on in the day. Like, it was like maybe like a couple hours after we arrived or something like that.
Yeah. So we just got a couple games and while we were down there saying hi to people, meeting people. That was pretty much that. And then the publisher area opened, and I think we pretty much all went in there to check things out.
Yeah, basically, I know I went across Meeple Source. I was like, I did like a quick scan of everything, and the one place in which I went to and actually bought stuff was at Meeple Source, because I told myself I wouldn't buy any more stupid metal coins, and I bought Viticulture coins. I just saw them, I was just like, yeah, why not? Like, I'm going to probably buy them eventually. So that's probably going to be a future video, comparing Viticulture coins to Seafall coins and the Scythe coins. But, and then not only that, I saw, like, a couple little promo Scythe coins, which I was actually trying to get for a while online, so I couldn't find them anywhere, and I found them for, like, $3 or $5 or something like that. Nice. So I was just like, okay, why not? So I got those, and I think that was one of my only purchases that day, which was getting from MeepleSource. Besides that, though, I just basically did a scan of the entire exhibitor hall, and it was pretty nice. It was pretty nice what they had over there. Cool Stuff had a huge section, but, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I don't know, not much to say about that, but it was good to see people. I remember Renegade was there, Arcane Wonders, Grey Fox Games, Gilhova was there with Formal Ferret, Bezier was there with a very interesting divide with Whistle Stop, the Medium Euro, and Werewords were there too, Suicide. North Star was there pushing Wits and Wagers Las Vegas, which I got to play later with the Dice Tower crew.
Nice.
For the Wits and Wagers, we used the new version. I hate to leave people out. Mayday was there. Other ones you guys remember?
Stronghold Games was there in the back. Stronghold,
yes.
There was Duke City, I think it's Duke City.
Druid City?
Druid City. Yep, Druid City. I'm so horrible at publisher names and designer names.
I mean, Ares Games.
Yep.
Tasty Minstrel Games.
NSKN. So there were a bunch.
Yeah.
It was a good... They were very small booths, and they were pretty much open. Like, you knew if you were next waiting for a demo, which was huge to me compared to Gen Con this last year. That was my biggest frustration with Gen Con 2016. Was just like, oh, I... am I demoing next? Oh, there's three groups that are waiting before. There was no line, but here it was very clear. Like, okay, you're next. Like, all right, we'll just wait for a demo. So that made it easier. Although, when I came home, I felt like, you know, I didn't demo enough games. Like, why didn't I demo that? Why didn't I demo that?
You have the perfect opportunity to demo all these games and just take advantage of it.
Yeah, to always know that. So, yeah, I feel like that was pretty much that. Does anybody remember anything from Wednesday till Wednesday night?
Yeah, I ran a speed dating event on Wednesday night, and that actually went over surprisingly very well. Like, I was fully walking into that event expecting it to bomb. Like, I was, like, walking in to be like, okay, this is going to be one of the most awkward situation between a group of, like, 20 to 30 people I've ever experienced. But what ended up happening was, it was weird, but and the reason why I was expecting it to bomb was because a lot of people dropped out the last second. And if anyone has ran a speed dating event, the hardest thing to come across is girls doing an event. And the only reason why I ran this event was because a lot of girls actually wanted to do it. Literally, there was maybe 8 girls pushing it and no guys even pushing it at first. So I was like, okay, fine. Got the hard part out of the way. Let's go ahead and do this event. But last second, there was like maybe 3 or 4 other girls dropped out. And then not only that, we had the exact opposite thing happen with the guys. Maybe 8, 10 guys signed up at the last second. But what ended up happening was a lot of people didn't show up, and for some odd reason, a group of girls brought like 8 of their friends or something like that.
Nice.
So at the end of the day, it was like 12 girls and 15 guys or something like that. Everyone had a great time. Everyone had a blast. A few of the girls actually ended up helping me out by getting in contact with everyone after the event and connecting all the matches and everything, so I didn't have to do that. I could just go play games. What's it called? So it actually went over perfect. It actually went over so well that they're thinking about making an official event next year. So I can't wait for that. So can't wait to see how that goes out for next year. But that was great. But that was my Wednesday night. That was the last thing I did besides play more games after that.
So I can't think of an event that would be more irrelevant to me. I am happily married and whatnot. But I'm thinking, no, that makes perfect sense. What a great thing to do at a convention, right? Especially board games, because board games are all about connecting people, and that's a way that people want to connect. Guys want to meet girls, girls want to meet guys. I'm feeling a song coming on. It's cool to know stuff like that's happening, where the need arises. Events like that can happen at conventions. So that's a neat takeaway for me, even though for me it's like, hey, yeah, come play games, Gary.
Yeah. The funny thing was, is I was talking to Tom afterwards. And Tom's a happily married guy and everything. Let me just say that.
We're all happily
married. Yeah. I'm the only single guy in the room, and I'm the only single guy in terms of all these conversations. Tom Basil, he was like, I was talking to him afterwards. He was like, you know what? He's like, I wouldn't even be sure if I would even participate in an event like that. He was like, we're talking with all the guys. We're just like, will we even participate in that? And we're like, I don't know. That'd just be too weird. Like, yeah. Do you think it'll be too weird? I was like, I don't know, man. I think it's a great opportunity to meet people that are in the same hobby as you. And if you're single, you're single, then go for it. Why not? Worst thing to get happy, you just have an awkward half hour. So.
And you just know 20 other people when you walk in to play games. Exactly, that was huge. So maybe you're literally just connecting with people, and you're like, look, I have no, this is not a love interest thing, this is just, now I met 20 other people that I'll know to play games with, or to avoid.
That was huge, too. There was people that were, like, way older than me at the event, which everyone was a pretty good medium age for the most part, and that was actually a great... That was actually a great thing, because then I actually met like a good 20, 30 people right off the bat first day. And it was just like, then we hung out a couple times afterwards for whatever, like just play games or whatever. So, yeah.
Cool. So then we did, actually, I think Gary and I did it, but you were there for the event, right? For the stupidest game show ever.
Yeah, I came in a little late, but yes. You guys had started up, right?
So Gary and I both participated in that. I'm not going to say a lot. It's online. It was fun, though. We both participated in the
questionnaire part. Yeah, it was Family Feud.
Family Feud. Thank you. So that was fun. Red is more popular than green, apparently, and I was wrong, but I thought for sure. And nobody said who was the designer. I said Sid Sackson. Nobody said Sid Sackson, so I figured the father of board gaming would get some love, but nope, none. So there's that. So then after that, did we participate? What was after that? Did they have two events that night?
I know they played two games. They played like Quiplash and they played Family Feud, yeah, but I think that was the end of the night after that point.
Cool.
If I'm not mistaken.
So I don't know, Wednesday night, so we'll roll into Thursday morning.
Yeah.
Thursday, I believe, was mostly just playing games and a whole bunch of stuff. Does anybody remember specifics? I should have had this better written down for Thursday. I could say I played a lot of games. We played Age of Steam late into the night.
I personally cannot remember what specific games I played on Thursday. Thursday was kind of a just kind of like a big blur of a day where it was just like I just did nothing but play games and walk around all day and stuff like that. I think the only thing I had planned to do that day was there was just a second game show, and that was really it. Besides that, it was just a wash of games throughout the entire day. Did we play Three Kingdoms Redux that day?
Yeah, that's the day we played that.
But yeah, besides that, in terms of anything specific, I know I just, I know I walked around and taught a couple games. I believe on that day I played Ponzi Scheme, and then I ended up teaching it later on that day too as well. So, but yeah, it was just a big wash of a day, I'd consider it. Not wash in terms of a bad thing, but yeah.
So just quick structure, there was a main gaming room that had the publisher area in it, and they could close that off, and the gaming library. So that was actually a smaller room, probably, I don't know, I would guess 200 tables in there or something.
Yeah,
probably. And so there was that area, and then there was another room next to that was probably more like 300 tables. That was never busy the whole con. Some of the nights, Friday and Saturday night, it was pretty busy, but not crazy, crazy busy. And then there was a third room next to that was a ballroom, which is where all the events took place. Yeah. Then there were a ton of side rooms for people to play in. There were tables in the hallway and a back area with all the mega games.
Yeah, the Boca rooms.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then there was a whole set of rooms with dedicated to publishers, like Asmodee North and Gigamonic and Quick Simple Fun. There were other various rooms. Haba had a room, and you could go and just demo their game. So they had that space. So there was definitely plenty of space, plenty of things to do.
The craziest thing I found out on like Saturday night was that there's apparently private rooms you could just go into.
Yeah.
Like I did not know about that. There were private werewolf games going on and everything. Mm-hmm. And when I mean private, like these were like individual meeting rooms. Like if you was to go into an office into a typical meeting room, like almost like a room we're in right now, I would say. But there was just rooms like that all over the place. I saw it. At least three or four of them. I did not know they were there until the last night. So
yeah, I saw like a couple where it was like war games and you're like all these ones that you want like a dedicated area, and like, you know, even some places where it's like it doesn't need to have the full like I don't know, like all that activity, like it's better to kind of be removed from that and kind of really think through everything and such. So, you know, it was cool to see, but I felt a little weird wandering into those rooms and see, like, yeah, there was like one table going. It's like, oh, I don't know what's going on here. I'm going
to. That happened to me once, and by luck, I happened to know one of the guys in the room. So I was like, hey, what up, Josh?
Yeah.
Just walked out.
Nice. So then Thursday night, I participated in the Wits and Wagers game. Again, that's online. That was fun. Also, I believe Wednesday and Thursday night, we did pictures for Dice Tower,
yeah.
All the contributors. There was like 40 contributors there or something.
Yeah.
I think we maxed out our picture at about 30 people, getting everybody together at the same time. But
yeah,
that was kind of fun, and that's been going around, so that's just kind of an interesting piece there.
Yeah, they had to do two nights because me and I think a couple of the people screwed up and not made it the first night. So I was like, oh, okay, we'll give it another shot then.
And then Friday, we all participated. I'll just cruise right through Friday because play more games. Really a game-playing con. I mean, compared to Gen Con, it's like night and day. You're like, you hit up the publishers, and you're like, all right, maybe we'll see that, or it'll be in store in a couple weeks, and whichever way, and then, you know, do that. So we all participated in the Dice Tower Awards, but first, sorry, I should mention the Jack Vassel Memorial Fund. They had that auction. I believe by the end they said they raised $20,000.
Really?
At the auction. And the high ticket item was Ignacy Trebicek from Portal Games brought the first copy of First Martians.
Yeah,
I and heard auctioned about that. It off for $850. And that was awesome. So neat to think. Like, obviously, people will say, are you crazy? Because people are getting their games in this week. But that person was not paying $850 for the game. They were donating $850 to the auction, and that was their, you know, their prize for making such a large donation. So, but that was really cool to see that. Also, there was a lot of Star Wars Destiny that went for pretty high. I think it got into the $200.
You could do a customized card too, right?
Yeah.
Really? Like an official customized card?
I think so, yeah. Yeah. It might have even gotten to the $300. It went pretty high. And there were other things that went for $300, but they were stacks of 30 games, you know.
Right.
Check Games Editions did every game they have in print.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that went for like $500 or something too. So, you know, there was those kind of things.
And but, the ticket for next year.
Yeah, I think that went for like $2,000, didn't it?
Pretty high up there too. That was an expensive one, but I mean,
yeah,
it was worth it. Like it was. people are getting that.
I think it was more than just like next year's tickets. I think it was like next year's tickets and then like a room and like everything organized or something like that. I can't remember the details.
So that was really cool. It was awesome to have that and to see that event and just see people coming out. And again, just another positive thing of like board gaming, of that hobby. It's like we're at this convention, we have all these people, and we can do a positive thing together. So that was neat. Then we all participated in the Dice Tower Awards. Again, kind of gloss over these because you can watch it. It was on the live feed. And we gave away awards. So I guess there were three big winners, really. Captain Sonar walked away with a bunch.
Yep.
Scythe walked away with a bunch, including Game of the Year. And Terraforming Mars walked away with a bunch.
Yep.
Those were really the three. And then there were a couple, you know, other games that were here and there. Gary, what award did you end up giving away?
I ended up giving away the Small Publisher Award.
Oh, nice.
Which ended up going to... Who did that go? Roleplayer, if I'm not mistaken? Yeah. But yeah, that was a... That was a pretty interesting one in discussion and everything like that. I guess the best way to put it is I was a little bit unfamiliar. I mean, you could watch the video and everything. Actually, we'll just say watch the video. But instead going into all the details about it, there's a lot to cover right now.
Yeah. I mean, to me, Role Player was the most accessible of all those games.
Yeah,
definitely. I remember specifically that Vast was there, and that's just rules heavy, and the fact that there's five characters running independent on rules. Arkwright, I believe, was in there, which is hands down my favorite of the bunch. But, I mean, that game is just not intended for a mass crowd. So how is it going to get a lot of votes? You know what I mean? And I don't remember the others that were in there. But you know, that made Role Player. Not Alone. Not Alone's pretty accessible.
Yeah.
And Cottage Garden. So, you know, so I give it to it over those. You know, over Cottage Garden and Not Alone. Now, you could argue those don't have publication in the States yet, till now. They've both been brought over by Stronghold.
Yeah, and
but they've definitely been here. You've seen them around. They came over pretty well. But so you could argue that. But in terms of accessibility, Role Player did, although that was a Kickstarter. So
yeah.
And it is a fun game. It's good. I haven't played Sagrada, but from people that I've heard who have played both, they like Role Player better generally, and Sagrada's been very popular. So
I haven't played Sagrada yet.
So that's kind of neat. So that was cool. We ended up giving away Best Strategy Game of the Year. So in that category was Great Western Trail, Terraforming Mars, Scythe, and two others, Feast for Odin, and another strategy game. And sorry that I can't remember. And I said to Brian before, hey, that's going to be Game of the Year, because those five games are all up for Game of the Year. So the strategy Game of the Year is going to be the Game of the Year. Oh, Rebellion was the other one. Which won Best Two-Player? No doubt. And he's like, you think? And I'm like, well, would they really go opposite? Like, would you vote for one of those for strategy game, but not for best game of the year? And there were five other games. There was Captain Sonar, Mechs vs. Minions, and some other things in the best game of the year. I said, well, unless people go kind of toward that lighter end, but I don't think they will. I thought Clank was the big omission from game of the year. I mean, that game is still being played, and I think it could have beat out something in strategy game. It could have beat out as Game of the Year because it's so accessible to people and some people are playing.
Yeah.
I could see if that had been in the mix, that could have gotten more votes. But Scythe ended up taking Game of the Year, and we gave Terraforming Mars Strategy Game of the Year, which I thought would then translate. I think component quality made the difference. I think people looked at Terraforming Mars and said, this is an amazing game, I love playing it. But overall, that component quality adds something to Game of the Year. And I think that speak some level of volume for people that when they look at Game of the Year, they don't just want the gameplay, they want the components to go with it. And Terraforming Mars, I would say it suffices. Other people would say it's subpar, you know?
Well, I think the other factor is it's taken into consideration is that even if Terraforming Mars is lacking the components, if it didn't have the high price point, which is almost comparable to games like Blood Rage and Scythe and stuff like that, even though it's a little bit cheaper on the end, then I think that would have went a long way to help them out, where it's like, okay, I'm not paying $60 for a game, where if I paid $60 or $70 or whatever for like a game like Blood Rage, you see all these crazy components in Blood Rage, but you don't see the same in Terraforming Mars. I think that probably helped a long way. Like, if it was maybe like a $40, $45 game, maybe $50 tops, then people would have put it a little bit to the side, I think, a little bit, and wouldn't be complaining about it as much.
And that all depends on your crowd too. Because if you took a crowd of 18XX players and said vote on one of these two games, I think they'd pick Terraforming Mars over Scythe, and they go, well, they're great components, but we don't really care.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you see Scythe being played? I did. I think I remember it a couple times, but not as much.
It was more equal than I think people perceive. But there
for plays
at the con?
Yeah.
I saw people playing Scythe at least every day, at least once every day.
If you asked me off the top of my head, I saw Terraforming Mars 20-plus times being played. But I probably saw Scythe 12 to 15.
Okay.
So it wasn't, like, doubled up. But, you know, it was close. But it was out there a bunch.
Yeah.
Because I definitely was looking for that. And I was going up to the Scythe people and saying, what do you think will win? And I went up to the Terraforming Mars people, what do you think will win? Pretty much everybody said Terraforming Mars, even the people playing Scythe. So I think it came as a bit of a shocker. But not a shocker in terms of, like, you know, Jamie doesn't deserve it or something like that. Yeah, like, it's a great game. Yeah. It's totally solid. It's not really one of my favorites, but it's solid. And I was impressed with the two-player when I played it, so I have to say that about it. So there was that. Cool, that was Friday. And then Saturday... since we were both in this, we should talk about this. Gary, you and I played a game of Rex, Final Days of an Empire, which is the FFG reskin of Dune.
Yeah.
So we played this with Roy Canada from Epic Gaming Night, Crystal Pisano from Board Game Blitz, and Josh from Grey Fox Games.
Yep. What is he? I think he's the lead game designer or something like that. Or lead,
I think more like sales or media.
Something like that.
Oh, no. Yeah, we're not sure exactly. But so we got to play this. Which can play six, but it's a five-player game. So, basically, it's not really a war game. It's really negotiation and alliances and all that kind of stuff. So what happened unique in our game was you shuffle a deck, and these cards come out that say, okay, now you can form and break alliances. And that came out, boom, right, first card off the bat. So, we almost formed an alliance, the two of us, because we controlled all the, basically, influence, which is money in the game.
Yep.
And so we would have, when we bid for cards, you'd give the money to me, and then when we play units, we'd give the money to you, and we would have just controlled money. But when I looked at the forces on the map, I had to go with Crystal and Roy, and then my total plan was, okay, we'll wear them down, use them to fight, and then I'll jump to Gary's team, and we'll see if that money can just win us to the end.
Yeah.
Then I stomped on Josh, like, immediately, using some of the powers that I had. And then in round two, those alliance cards came up again, back-to-back, and there's only three in the deck. So I had an opportunity to switch teams there, but it made no sense with the position I was in. And when the next card came out, I was like, well, probably not. We figured house rule should be shuffle that alliance card back in if it comes out twice in a row like that.
That's not a bad idea.
Just to keep that from happening. But anyway, then it played out from there. So I kind of took a little risk. I think it made sense. But I just said, okay, let me just throw all my resources at everything. So because everything I spent went to you. And I said, let me just flood you with resources so much you can't spend them because you have too many, which is kind of an ironic thing. And I'll get all my units on the board and guarantee a win against Josh and take him out of the game.
Yep.
And that's what happened. I completely removed him from the game. And now you guys were allied, and there was no chance for you to pass him any money.
There was one chance later on in which Brandt's going to get to where I could have given him... I did give Josh a lot of money to help him regain some of his feet. But what ended up happening was I didn't give him enough. I was just like, I should have given him everything I had and just rebuild my...
And then
collect again to accept. Yeah, I didn't. But anyways,
So then we went into round three, and I think it was pretty much like you could have held out. But once I started seeing the money that was coming out on the board, and it was like between Roy and Crystal and I, we would just run around grabbing that money.
Yeah.
And you'd have to spend so much time defending your one base, because we had four of the five bases. You'd have to defend that one and strike out tactically against one of us, trying to slow us down, but it would be inevitable.
It would have, the only way I could have possibly won that game is if I dragged that game out and made that game a 6-hour game easily, and then literally every single turn I got, I would have had to do some sort of little covert strike on someone to try taking them out of one of their spaces. And my character I was like I can't remember what character. It's the character that's on the main box, the line faction or whatever. But I was the character in which if you hold out until the end of the game and if no one else has won the game, then you win the game. So if I could have actually held out until the end of the game and just prevented them from winning, I could have won. But it was very doubtful. Like, it was very unlikely. I would have had to get some really lucky cards. I would have had to get... Everything would have had to go my way, but it was really unlikely that was going to happen. So the exact opposite happened. The game ended in, like, what? An hour and a half?
Yeah, it was not very long. And people apologized, like, because it was... I guess it was my first play. I feel like I'd played the game before, but I can't remember when, so... I thought it was great. It was a great game to learn. Yeah. I was like, okay, I could definitely see wanting to play this. I could see for some people when it does get to 5 and 6 hours, it's just too much. But yeah. I don't know. I feel like it's a game I could keep moving in terms of that. So, you know, we won't go through all of it, but it was really fun. It was fun to play with all of them, and it was fun to get my Ameritrash on after a lot of Euro games, which I'll go through in the next episode. It was fun to finally kind of switch over and play some of those. So that was a good time. And then we jumped to the Mega Game.
Yep.
So why don't you tell us some about the Mega Game that we played?
So, we played, the Future Tense Mega Game, which is actually the second time that this specific Mega Game, I think, has ever been ran anywhere in the world, if I'm not mistaken. If it wasn't anywhere in the world, it was at least with this group of guys from, that was running the Mega Game. And basically, essentially what a Mega Game is that a Mega Game is about 40 plus to 60, people playing a single game, in which we're, the games change from game to game. In this specific Future Tense one, we were basically separate factions that were trying to basically clear the CO2 levels on the planet, except we weren't exactly all friends with each other, so we're basically trying to take control of territory and basically bid for power and items and stuff like that throughout the game. And what's cool about the Mega Games is that since it's 40 to 60 plus people, everyone's kind of doing their own thing. Every single faction is separated into about 5 to 6 people in it. Everyone has their own job. For example, I was a war room guy in which I played a game that's very similar to Game of Thrones and Kemet. While there are other people that are playing bluffing games such as like a Blind Man's Bluff. There was like a negotiation room where they're negotiating different policies and stuff like that to enact and go through. Were they playing a specific game?
It was
game
like
for that?
Mini BSG, Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, okay, great.
Like trying to solve crises as a group.
Okay. There was like another group where they were playing like a I pick you choose kind of game, like sort of like a New York Slice, in which they're basically doing that for resources where one person would organize what everyone's going to pick, and then they'll basically go through that process. But everyone's playing different game, but the cool thing about it is that all these different games gather resources for the general game, which everyone's kind of playing, where everyone's trying to get resources and build up. Upgrade their troops, upgrade their weapons, and everything like that. It was really interesting. It was a really great game, and not only that, it was the first Mega Game ever. Actually, it was the third Mega Game I ever played. All the other ones I played have been 6 to 8 hours. This one was under 3 hours, which I liked a lot. But one thing that was missing from the older Mega Games that I played is that there was less RPG elements. Yeah, now people can love that part of it, that it was less RPG elements. Right. I'm not even RPG or LARP fan at all. Like, people have tried to convert me, and it's just not the thing for me. I actually missed that in the Mega Game because there's so many cool things you could do. Like, for example, in the other Mega Games, you could say, "Hey, Russia, can we like send a spy out there and poison their water hole or whatever?" Yeah. You can actually legitimately do that, and then someone from Control would say, "Oh, it required these amount of resources. You have to roll this on a dice and stuff like that." And then they'll send you on your way and you can go ahead and do whatever you need to do. Go ahead and accomplish that. Less so in this. So it was very more straightforward, which is great. And I loved how it was. And it kept it under 3 hours, which was perfect. But it did miss that element in the game. But
yeah, you could tell. You know, you could tell there was a little bit less. And it was interesting. I had not done this and really even researched it. I just was like, yeah, sure, I'll do that. That sounds like a brand thing to do. So I jumped in, you know, trying to just do a variety of things and represent Dice Tower there. And it was neat. I discovered that as the game went on. So I was doing that Blind Man Bluff in the casino, but we would like basically play for draft order of resources, but we didn't know what the resources were. We, you know, you found out decently into the game by about half hour in. I, you know, 45 minutes in, I knew what they were, but it didn't seem nearly as much. Like my teammates were coming back, like, "Oh, I got this stack of 15 cards," and I'd win like 2. And I was like, "Well, this seems pointless." So I started to just play the system. So I started to just bail to people. I said, "Look, I'll drop to you, so you get first draft pick, and then just owe me a card and like a future help on something."
And that's the entire game. That's the entire game. That's what people miss out on the game. They think like, "Oh, is this some sort of like RPG or something like that?" It's like, no, it's a game, and you got like everything about the game is a game in it. So it's like you got to walk up to people, you got to negotiate things, you got to talk to people and say, hey, if you do this, I'll do this. I'll owe you a favor in the future. You can walk around, spread secrets and stuff like that. You could just lie to people, which is like, it's great. And
it's just great.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's you have to go into these games not thinking so 2D about how everything works and just trying to be like, oh, I need to get this amount of money to move this guy this place. Like, no, you could just be like, hey, maybe I should just walk around the table for a second, ask people, hey, if I help you out in the future, will you just give me a resource now? And they're like, yeah. And then all of a sudden, hey, you can move this dude now way earlier than you normally could just by negotiating with people. It's like, that's what I love about the game. It's like, it's so open-ended in what you can do with it. And that's why I love the mega games in general. But yeah, what was also really cool about this mega game in particular was that it was the Saturday one that was scheduled with all the Dice Tower guys and all the contributors. Each of the Dice Tower contributors and guys were leaders on our own teams. So they tried to pit us against each other as much as they could. Like, I know Tom had a team, Eric had a team, I had a team with Crystal, actually. You had a team, Bran.
Ambi was on my team.
Oh, Ambi was on your team.
And her husband, Dobie.
Oh, okay. I didn't notice that. But yeah, so it was really cool playing with all the Dice Tower guys there and stuff like that. I was on the War Room table with... who was on the... Tom was on the War Room table with me. And... Mike from the board game segment. I'm drawing a brain fart right now. Why am I drawing a brain fart in his board game segment? Oh my god. Oh my god, he does it with his wife. Why am I drawing a brain fart? It'll come to me, guys. Sorry about that. But I was against them on the
War Room. Talking about Hunter Thomason?
No.
Okay.
Sorry. Maybe?
Yes, with his wife. Anyway.
I'm getting mixed up with people at this point. Sorry, I'm horrible with names. But yeah, we're playing with them on the War Room, and it was pretty funny seeing all the interactions between us going back and forth and stuff like that. And like, I remember it was specifically one time it was pretty funny. Eric walked up to me at one point, was just like, "Hey, Eric, he's like, hey, Garrett, do you know anything about that satellite that's being built over there?" I knew everything about that satellite. I knew all the information about that satellite, and I just told him to not worry about it. I was just like, "Nah, don't worry about it, Eric. It's no big deal. It's not gonna help you out in anything. Just stay away from it. It's fine." Nice. Just ignore it. But yeah, it's really fun interacting with those guys on the during the mega game too.
Yeah. So that was pretty much that. I know Saturday morning there was also the flea market, so a lot of people got involved in that. And then we were off Sunday morning. We left on our flight and you were around for another day.
Yeah.
Mostly just playing games, things were shutting down.
Yeah, I mean, personally, this is not like on the Dice Tower or anything at all. This is just in terms of, it seems like almost like a general how conventions happen. But personally, in the future, I'm thinking about doing what you guys did, which is leave Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And possibly, we didn't do this, but I would come a day early. Yeah, to arrive Tuesday because... leaving Sunday night, the only problem with leaving Sunday night was that, I got more gaming in. I was at the convention longer. I could have taken advantage of all of the, everyone, literally every publisher there was just like, 50% off, everything. And I was just like, I could have walked over, because I was in the middle of a game of Scythe, so I didn't walk over. But, and I did have more space in my bag to fit stuff in. But, you could enjoy that part of it, but besides that, it is kind of like, at the end of the day, everyone has their plans. People are trying to leave and stuff like that. So you can't sit down and play certain games and everything like that. So it's like, it'd be much better off leaving that Sunday morning, in my opinion, to then also get home, possibly even relax that day or like at least rewind for that day or get back into the groove an extra day rather than, in my example, I got home at like 1 a.m. and then was straight to work the next day.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Nice. So that was Dice Tower Con 2017. That was really the highlights in terms of events and things. I realized, Brian, we were involved in more events than you, so you were playing games, a lot of games this time. So the next episode, we will make sure to go over games, and that'll be Brian and I, and we'll have a lot more there. And I know people are dying to hear about, you know, Sentient and other games that were there that were popular. We played Lisboa, we talked about Lignum, but, you know, there were a bunch of other games that we got to play there, so we'll definitely go over those as well. But all in all, I thought it was a great convention. Night and day compared to Gen Con. I love both because I like the shopping, craziness, new games on the table, big giant events, 1,000 people watching Dice Tower. That's really cool to me. But it was great to just have a room and you just sit down and you say, oh, let's play something. Or it seemed like every 20 steps you see another media person or Dice Tower contributor, you know, and that was cool. And then just to be able to, like, get back to your room was just, like, a short walk across the parking lot and all that kind of stuff. So
everything is accessible at Dice Tower Con. Whereas Gen Con, it's got more of the hustle and bustle and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, even just getting food at Gen Con is a bear. So there's that. All right, any last things here before we wrap this episode up, Gary?
Only two things real quickly. I might actually be going to Gen Con, so I'm looking for that in the future, but that's still in the works as we speak. Only other thing that happened during Dice Tower Con that is worth mentioning is that I ran a review block, was pretty cool. I got to review three games, Wits of Wagers, Vegas, Insider, and Werewords. Those are coming out on video probably within the next month, maybe two absolute tops. But besides that, though, the convention was a blast. I was thinking about going there maybe next year, but to the point where I was like, I want to rotate conventions and go to something different next year. But I almost feel like I have to go there again next year. Like, it's like not just because I'm a contributor or anything like that, but it's just like I had that much fun where it's like, why take a risk on another convention when you know this place is going to be a blast to go to? So I feel like I almost have to go there again next year. So probably see me again there next year. But yeah, I loved the convention. It was a great time. It was my first major convention, and it did not disappoint.
Yeah, no, it was a great time. Great to meet everyone that was there. So, again, it was just fun to play a lot of games and talk to all the publishers, too. So, it was a great time.
Nice. Yeah, me too is my favorite convention so far that I've been to. Maybe except the one I run at my house, VonnerCon.
A little bias there.
Which I really enjoy. But that's a whole different thing. We don't have a lot of publishers there. Really enjoyed it. So I've got a vlog that I made that should be coming out on Dice Tower. So you get to see more. It's pretty short. I didn't do a great job. I feel like that'd be another thing in the future that I'd be like, okay, I need to just make a whole bunch of clips for this.
I did the same exact thing. Like, I sat there, I went down to the convention, I was like, I'm going to make a really good vlog for this. And then when I got there, I just got so caught up in things that I have a lot of footage, but nothing good for a vlog.
Yeah, I'm like day one and then Saturday.
kind of similar.
So that's how mine work. But I figured, you know what? It's like 5-6 minutes, so maybe people just want to see that. Yeah. Here's just a couple quick. And I've got some good stuff. I've got the Game of Magical Athlete we played with like 10 Dice Tower contributors.
I heard about that.
That was really, really good. So I've like, you know, people are going to want to see that. I think I was the only one that ended up filming it. So. And a little of me singing Phil Collins. So there you go. So take a look at me now. All right. That is this episode number 56 of the Portal Gaming Podcast. Thank you, everybody. I am your host, The Brant. With us is...
your co-host, Brian.
And Gary Pope from Late to the Table.
Awesome. And until next time, we hope you step into the portal.